So, Howard Blue, welcome to WGXC.
Thank you very much.
You are a historian, right?
Yes.
And you're the person behind this new exhibition at the Roelof Janssen Historical Society.
Well, there are multiple persons better and more accurately put like that. We had a committee that did this, uh-huh. and the Roelof Janssen Historical Society had decided on this topic before I came on, which was only back in August,
right?
Onto the board. So we've worked well as a committee.
Great.
And what kind of historian are you?
Well, actually, I was described for a while as a broadcast historian because I did a book on radio and how it affected the war effort during World War II.
Oh, okay.
That sounds called Words at War.
Oh, Words at War.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I need to understand what the Roelof Janssen area is because I've heard it mentioned many times. I don't know who Roelof was. I don't know who Janssen was, and I'm not sure where it is.
And who did they kill?
Okay, Roelof Janssen was a actually he was a 17th century farmer who immigrated probably from Norway, but we know that he married his wife in Amsterdam, Holland, he apparently was with a group that discovered the Roelof Janssen stream named for him, mm-hmm. That emptied into the Hudson. So the area is, among other places, perhaps Hillsdale, Copake, Ancrum, Gallatin, and Taganic.
Is that where the Roelof Janssen sort of...
Yeah, I wouldn't swear that it hit all of those towns, but it might. And those towns are the ones that are in the purview of our historical society.
I see. Okay, so it takes Bashbish Falls and all of that into...
Yes, it does take Bashbish Falls, and I brought this photo that your listeners could hear. This is an 1895 photo that is in the exhibit that we have. Partly it's in there because almost all the camps used to take their kids to this wonderful site. And in the process of
you've been there, Jake?
Yeah. In the process of gathering photos, I got hold of this image. I guess we should describe it, that it shows people in period outfits in 1895. And you can see the men dressed in their cravats and their suits. And
of course,
the women,
they weren't period costumes at that point. They were like
contemporary,
<clothes.
laughs> right.
Well, so people didn't have like hiking outfits.
Well, that was the hiking outfit of the day, I guess. Maybe a lot of women today that I haven't noticed wear these long skirts when they're hiking. But anyway, this is one of the wonderful black and white photos that we have in that exhibit.
Why did so many camps? Well, you're talking about camps in Columbia County, I gather.
Yes, our focus is on the camps of the Mid-Hudson Valley, mm-hmm. particularly this area that you referred to as the Rojan area.
Mm-hmm. And why were they drawn to the Rojan area, do you think, in particular?
I'd say, as a proud resident of Copake, that it's one of the most beautiful places in the world.
But there's lakes.
And there's a lot of lakes, which are right. Water is crucial to right. success of a good camp right. like that. And at that time, there were two railroads that ran into the area to transport campers from downstate, particularly the New York City area, mm-hmm. up to here.
Are we just talking about young people's camps or all kinds of we're talking about camps for adults as well?
Good question. There were two kinds of adult camps, although there's some overlap too, but the first one was an adult camp along the lines of the Borscht Belt camps mm-hmm. of the Catskills. Mm-hmm. Lots of wonderful entertainment, and we have a photo of Liberace at Camp Copake on the island in Copake Lake. And here's a photo. Again, I have to tell this photo to you.
Here's
listeners.
A photo showing many
this
people.
Is Craryville Railroad Station, circa, they're all flappers.
Mm-hmm.
So this is 1928 or so. I forget when people stopped wearing the flapper hats, but there's a crowd of mostly young women in their 20s and early 30s who have just disembarked from the railroad at Craryville Railroad Station, and they're on their way by taxi or whatever to Camp Kopek, where they're going to enjoy the sun, the water, and the entertainment from all these people that used to come up there.
That's a wonderful photo.
Come
now,
see it.
That were camps like that sort of like the ones in the Catskills, where there were separate buildings, or was it one big? I mean, what was the housing like for these camps?
I wouldn't say camps like that, because this was a unique one, and I'll talk about a second type of adult camp in a minute. But this camp had a number of separate small cottages for the campers.
And it was co-ed. I mean, both men and women.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But I think it was probably largely women. Hmm. The other type of camp for adults was a very different type, and this was during the Depression era from 1933 to about 1942. There were the Civilian Conservation Corps camps, and these were for young men, young unemployed men, to come and do conservation work in the area. One of the places that they worked in was the Taconic Lake State Park.
Yeah, that's an amazing building. And it's have you seen that, Ellen? It used to be the changing area and the snack bar and all that.
Right.
It's an incredible conservation era
and
building.
And we have a photo of the men building the water tower that still exists in the park. I don't know if it's used or not, but the building, the structure is still there.
There's also a lookout tower.
Right.
That they built.
Okay, they built a lookout tower on Stissing Mountain.
That's for fire detection?
Fire monitoring, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are the main adult camps. And then most of the camps were for children. And we've divided them into two types broadly. One are the private for-profit camps. Two of those camps are going to celebrate their centenary in 5 years, Camp Scatico and Camp Pontiac, which still exist, going strong. Both of them are fairly strong sports camps, and they've had that reputation for a while, and they're well-run and have a tremendous array of facilities for kids that people 50 years ago might not have dreamt of. They've got climbing towers, they've got go-kart tracks, and so on.
Go-kart tracks.
And the other...
Spoiled kids.
The other camps were the agency-sponsored camps. And there were two of them that were sponsored by settlement houses, which were established in Chicago and New York City and probably other cities too, to help in the early 19th century, to help immigrant families adjust to urban life in America. Mm. One, the Greenwich House settlement house in the village in New York City, established Greenwich House Camp in Kopek Falls. Trying to think, I'm drawing a blank about how far back that went. The other one, Bronx House, established Bronx House Emmanuel Camp on Empire Road in Kopek in about... I think in the 1920s. And Bronx House Camp, under a different name now, still exists. And now it's sponsored by the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, I believe, and it's called Berkshire Hills Eisenberg Camp. And those camps had more of a social agenda than the privately run camps. They had kids doing some work projects. I know that in more recent years, Berkshire Hills Camp brought kids over to another agency-sponsored camp for kids with various developmental problems, Camp Ann. And I'm not sure exactly what they did there, but they were helping out. There was that type of ethic.
Well, I want to ask Jake if he's ever been to camp. Have you been to music camp, for example? Our resident musician.
I went to Bard for a music camp last summer. That's about it, though.
But that was a day project. I mean, or did you stay there?
That was a day. No, we didn't stay there. Yeah, it was for like a week or something. Actually, went to an archaeology camp when I was like 10 or something, too.
Where was it?
It was Maryland, I think. Hmm. Yeah, Maryland.
I went to a camp, Ellen.
Where did you go to camp?
I went to camp in Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
It was at the home of the Little League World Series. It was a baseball camp.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
You went to a baseball camp?
Yeah. And we got to play on the World Series field. You know, it's what they do with it in the summer when the series isn't going on. They use it
great.
As a camp. It was pretty cool.
I went to a 4-H camp.
Oh.
Where I discovered my theatrical prowess. And you know.
I thought you milked cows at a 4-H camp.
No, no. We didn't do anything that was memorable beside my theatrical production,
really?
As I recall.
Do you remember what it was?
No.
No, Nanette?
No, nothing that fancy. Now, tell us the story about Lou Gehrig.
Could I just say that you two gentlemen touched on something that I think that nowadays camps have tended to be more specialized.
Yeah.
So you have a music camp. There's one camp that I came across on the internet that's particularly focused on vocal music, science camps, and so on. I think that in the past, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe 70s, they were more generalized.
Yes.
You were about to ask me a question?
Well, there's some story about Lou Gehrig in one of the camps. Why was Lou Gehrig there?
Yeah, we interviewed dozens of people for the signage in the museum. And we have to be very tight and concise with the signage because people are standing. They don't want to read long things. But we did come up with some great stories that we've summarized. And the Lou Gehrig one involved his coming through some connections with the owners, I believe, at Camp Scatico in Elizaville, which is in the town of Gallatin. Word got out that he was going to be there, so they had maybe 1,000 people from the surrounding area to see him, and he was attending a baseball game between two groups of campers. And then at a certain point, the owner, who himself was a major sports figure in his day, Nat Holman, the first basketball superstar, was also a coach for NYU, I believe. He announced, "Pinch hitting for so-and-so is Mr. Lou Gehrig." And you can imagine the crowd's reaction that they've got this this great baseball player there. And Gehrig gets up, and there's a 14-year-old Jewish kid named Stinky, nicknamed Stinky, and he's pitching, and he throws the first ball, and Gehrig swings and misses. And he throws the second ball, and Gehrig swings and misses and falls in the dirt. And sure enough...
Was he doing this on purpose, or...?
I wasn't there, but your guess is as good as mine that he certainly must have been. Okay. And Stinky strikes him out. Now, flash forward 5 or 6 years from then, and Stinky's now in uniform during World War II in Europe. And Stinky's making a lot of money based on this experience. And I'm not going to tell you the rest of the story because you have to come to the museum to see the punchline.
It turns out to be Sandy Koufax. What's the story?
No, it was Sandy Koufax is not yet born when this is. Well, I'm not sure how old he was born, but anyway, no, it was Lou Gehrig.
That's a great story.
So that's one of the stories, and we've got I actually meant to take a count, and I haven't had a chance, but we've got a bunch of wonderful little stories. A lot of them fairly short because the signage is short, but people will enjoy them.
And when is this open?
Actually, we're having our opening reception Friday evening at 5:30 in Copaic Falls.
Tomorrow, 5:30.
That is tomorrow, yes. And Dee Dee Barrett, the New York State
Assemblywoman.
Representative, will be our keynote speaker.
We've heard of her.
For some short remarks.
Yeah.
And then we'll open up the museum and people can come in. And we're actually going to be serving s'mores there. So, you know, those who come will get a little taste at least.
You're a s'more fan, Ellen?
I don't think I should tell you that I've never eaten a s'more, but...
Well, you have to come.
Well, in that case, don't tell me.
When I went to camp, we didn't have s'mores.
Well, yeah, you were, you know... artists.
Where is the museum?
Let me just, if I may, also add something important, that the museum exhibit will be viewed from July 4th to October 12th every Saturday and Sunday from 2 to 4. And anybody who has a group that they want to bring and wants a special curatorial tour can contact me by my via my email address, and that's memrevs@gmail.com. Mary Eagle Mary Roger Eagle Victor Sam@gmail.com. memrevs@gmail.com.
MemRevs@gmail.com. Memrevs. And where is the museum?
The museum is on in Copaic Falls, which only has two or three businesses, so it's easy to spot. It's opposite the Taconic Wayside Inn, for those who know the area. It's a former church, but it's accessed by coming via Route 22. It's about 2 or 3 miles south of Route 23, on the west side of Route 22, and you'll see the sign for the turnoff for Copaic Falls. It's Route 44. You only go in a quarter of a mile, and then you can't miss it opposite the inn.
Right. Is there anything else we missed that you'd like to tell us?
Well, I would say that very important, even if you never went to camp, didn't have kids who went to camp, this exhibit is worth seeing because it is very much about growing up. And there's all sorts of aspects of physical, emotional maturing, and so on. So people will have a good time and see these great old photos. We've got signs and photos relating to polio.
Do you have any memorabilia as well?
We do. We have a plaque that was a wooden plaque that was made by one or a couple of the campers during the color wars, and I haven't talked about that. That's a major series of competitions that go on in many of these summer camps.
Sure.
There's some signage explaining that. We've got a canoe and a bunch of sports-related things. We've got a wasp nest to remind you of what it's like to be in the countryside in the summertime, with a little signage. We've got a former camper's, a girl's shorts in there. And those shorts have a whole bunch of different colored stripes on them. And it's a charming story. And again, I'm going to be a teaser here and say, you have to come and see it, and you will smile. Okay.
Guaranteed smile.
Yes.
Well, if the photos are anything like the ones you brought to us, it's going to be a wonderful exhibition. Thank you so much
for coming
in.
We've been talking to Howard Blue, who is one of the forces behind the Roelof Jansen Historical Society's exhibition called Swimming, Singing, and S'mores, which is the Roelof Jansen...
It's 120 years of camps in the Mid-Hudson Valley.
Right. I think that's where I learned to sing harmony. It was in camp.
Oh. You know? Around the campfire?
Around the campfire. Yep.
Nice.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for coming in.